Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you came back. I had a good week this week, I think. Lots of exciting news happening for me personally. And I think we had a good show week. On Monday, of course, had the very sad discussion about drug overdoses. And the dad that posted the picture of his son on a morgue gurney because he was doing a drug that comes in powder form that is found in a lot of our cold remedies. Mucinex and Dimetapp and many of the cough syrups. And apparently its nickname is DMX, and it is, in powder form, very deadly. So that story was interesting and gave us pause for thought in regard to some of the over-counter drugs that we use every day, give to our kids, think that the FDA has checked them out, and they're probably not safe for all of us. Some of us won't be bothered at all. But it's like everything else we talk about. We're all so different. What is good for me is bad for you. So it was a good show, and we learned quite a bit. Tuesday on the Bullies to Buddies show, we talked about one of the things that starts the bullying arena is the fact that people get jealous of each other, and people covet each other's material things. And we talked about how much nicer your own personal world is if you, if you appreciate what's happening to your friends. And, of course, Wednesday, we talked about the search for Prince Charming and Princess Fiona. And Thursday, yesterday, we got to make a new friend whose name is Sarah that we were all very impressed by and could maybe learn something from, even though she's only 17. So it was a great week, so let's talk about it. I'm going to bring in Shell. Good morning, honey.
Well, good morning, hon. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. I just had a sneezing attack just before it was time for me to get on the show. I don't know. Almost every morning here lately I do that. There must be something in my office or something that tickles my nose or something. I don't know. But every morning in here, I've been in here since 5:30 and didn't sneeze or anything until it's 3 minutes before the show. So,
but isn't that how it happens anyway?
Yeah.
I mean, I go through sneezing fits every morning also. And although my allergies are not what they were when I was younger, I still do have seasonal allergies that bother me a little bit. And I've noticed that temperature changes, like what's happening now. It got real cold again last night. That it will, that I'll start sneezing just from the colder temperatures. It's I'm very, very sensitive. You know, that's why that seminar I went to on the weekend. The room was very, very cold, and just from the cold temp, it's something that triggers something in my body, and I'll get a little bit of a sore throat and things like that. Where a lot of people don't, it's something that my body reacts to. You know, so it could just be the weather that we're going through. We're still going through shifts. It gets nice and warm during the day, but then it gets really, really cold at night. And when that happens, the air smells different.
Yeah,
when you walk out,
true.
This is anywhere in the country or anywhere in the world. If you're in the same place I'm talking about, you're not traveling. When it's warmer and when it's cooler and when it's muggy, the air actually smells different. And the reason is there's different particles that can be suspended. You know, there are particles that are so tiny you don't see them, but they're suspended in the air. And at different types of the year, we're breathing all that in. So, yeah, you're definitely got some pollen stuff going on.
Yeah. Well, like I said the other day, when the temp is not real cold or real hot, when the wind is blowing, we have so much pollination in Florida because there's always something to bloom in Florida. Always. It's not like up north where the trees become barren at a certain time. It's right. like constant, you know. Monday's show. Let's go to Monday's show because that was sad, but I was glad we did the story because we found out about something that we didn't know anything about, which is that DMX. And actually, at the pharmacy or at Walgreens, I looked through. Almost everything has it. Almost everything in some on some level. So, if somebody abuses, like say, takes a cough syrup that they like kids, you know, with all the flavors and everything. I've bought cough syrups before that the grandchildren had no problem taking because they thought it was sweet and tasted good.
Yep,
so
exactly.
So if they, yeah, so even if they overdo that, depending probably on their age and their immune system and all of the things above, it could be harmful to them. Although, as you mentioned, you know, we're supposed to put our faith in the FDA, but we know that that's kind of blind faith and not always something to be depended on. So,
well, regardless of what the FDA is doing, whether, you know, whether they really are taking the appropriate action to protect us, the one fact that is indisputable is that doctors are not trained properly with regard to prescribing medication. And what I mean by that is the experience I've had more than once, and I've spoken to other people who have had the same thing, is that doctors are not really taught about the side effects. So when they just arbitrarily hand out samples to somebody, or you have 20 people in 1 week come through their office with the same complaint, then they just do a cookie-cutter prescription, okay, well, here, take this, they don't warn people. Because on one hand, they're really not educated sufficiently enough about the side effects. If they are, it's dramatically downplayed by the pharmaceutical companies. So that's why you have a lot of people that suffer severe side effects and weren't even prepared for it, didn't even know that it could happen because their doctors didn't warn them. And even though they had these commercials on TV, the commercials are done in a very deceptive way because while they're giving the litany of really horrible side effects that somebody can suffer from, they have this beautiful music playing. I mean, they really know how to do a visual to confuse you because you're hearing all these side effects, but then you're seeing people dancing and running on the beach and playing with their grandkids and this beautiful music. And it's done on that way quite deliberately. Because what it does is it invalidates the warnings. So people hear it and they say, wow, that must be so rare, it's not going to happen to me. So then people don't even pay attention to it. So it's kind of a double-edged sword with that, is that when they get you in both directions because they're either the doctor doesn't warn you or they make it sound like it's so rare that you're probably not going to get it anyway. And that's why people don't research pharmaceuticals. They think that, and if you watch the tone of the commercials, that's kind of the tone of the pharmaceutical industry working through doctors' offices. And a lot of times people will take these drugs and have one of two things happen. They'll get terribly addicted to it, and now all of a sudden they need more of that drug, or like this young man who looked for it in other places, you know, or they'll have side effects that will make their health picture or their emotional picture worse. So it really, really is something that I highly recommend that people just educate themselves about what drugs do to the body before they just take it because a doctor is telling them that it's their best option.
Well, and let's remember the drug that I'm talking about, this DMX, is not something a doctor has to prescribe to you.
Mm-hmm.
In all those over-the-counter, mostly cold remedies. So,
mm-hmm.
But I'm sure that that's not how this young man got hooked on it. He must have got hooked on it the way you're talking about, is by using it for something else or being prescribed it for something else, or maybe I found the same kind of information when I tried to research it some more. I probably need to find a more elaborate site for, but the names, because I'm not a doctor or a nurse or had any training in that, some of these words all sound the same to me. So it's really hard reading for me to get involved in that. But some of the sites that I've found are very intricate sites. I mean, you really kind of have to know your different drugs. And then they have derivatives. It's like penicillin is a main drug that they learned how to grow and all that kind of stuff. But now it has like, I don't know, 15 to 30 different derivatives that are based on penicillin with other things added to it for different reasons. So it's very confusing unless you're really trained in it. But this kid must have been doing the powder form. And if he was, this is just conjecture on my part because I don't know. The story didn't tell if this is what he was doing. But because it came in powder form, the first thing I thought of is he was either snorting it or cooking it and using it in an IV. But because he was bleeding from his nose, his ears, and his eyes, kind of tells me that he was probably snorting it. So how he found this powder form, unless it's now a street drug, but I didn't find a lot about it. Maybe when you're doing research on the book, if you find anything, make a note and share that with us, Shel.
Yes, I will. I will. You know, but I know that that's highly addictive substance. But again, the only people that are going to get addicted to it are people that have that physiological propensity for it. You know, so evidently he had that issue, and that's what kind of kept driving him to look for different things, which is it's sad because these people, unless they're educated, and education on this helps the addict. That's the another reason why I kept pressing that issue, is that if you know somebody that's addicted, they're not going to be of a mindset to try and solve that problem because their brain doesn't work properly. They don't analyze even their own personal situations properly. But most drug addicts happen to be very intelligent people. There was actually something in there that said why the IQ tends to be higher in somebody who's a drug addict. That's why you really don't see a lot of drug addicts that suffer from mental retardation or Down syndrome or something. Usually it's somebody who's got fairly high intelligence that becomes addicted. And there's actually a correlation between IQ and this genetic defect, which is another interesting thing that brought out. So they can be reached with information. That's the point. Because they are intelligent enough, if you approach them with information and you say, look, this is what's happening to you, this is why you're feeling this way, and this is why you haven't been able to beat it, so let's try this. And in many cases, they're reachable in that format once they understand what their brain is doing and that they understand why they're not getting the correct emotions and situations and stuff like that. And a lot of times that will turn them to look for a better solution, but most times not, that's not the information that comes to them. It's more of a look what you're doing to the family and look what you're doing to yourself and you look terrible, and those things are not going to turn an addict around. But telling them what they're doing to their brain from a scientific standpoint, which you can get in these studies that I did, that would get their attention because they really don't believe they're doing anything to themselves, and they don't want to hear it from family members.
Well, and I think that that it is a it is an issue with that about how you process what is going on in your life, and I do think that you're right that intelligent really. Really deep thinkers, people that can get lost in their own mind because of what's going on or something that they're concentrating on, they are very bright. But sometimes they're so bright that they burn themselves out. And I think that you're right about the fact that in a lot of cases, those are the people that turn to help to soften the world a little bit, and those are some of the choices that they make. I've met many incredibly bright people who were alcoholics, many, many, many. And I've always thought that's why, because they know too much. They just simply know too much. So it's interesting that you brought that up, because I agree with that, Shell, and I see some, and if they can find a love or something to point all of that brain power to, then they have a different journey. But if they can't find that, then their journey gets pretty confusing, because they don't know what to do with all those smarts, I guess.
So, yeah, well, like on the show Big Bang Theory, it's an interesting show, because it shows the social dysfunction of a lot of people that have super high IQs, and a lot of them would never touch drugs to begin with because they have this knowledge. But for those that do, there really is sort of a sense of disconnection from the rest of the world, and that's why a lot of people that have these high IQs do turn to different types of things. Some going into gambling, you know, because they're so smart that they can, like, count cards, but then they get addicted, you know, and things like that. So it's not just drugs and alcohol. It can be gambling. It can be other things. But because they have this, like, social ineptness, when they're doing whatever drug they're doing, they feel in control, and that's the deception. That's what the drug or alcohol or gambling, it gives them a sense of control. It gives them a sense of sensation, emotional sensation, that they don't get unless they're doing this thing. And it's terrible. But like I said, there are ways for them to get there without having to do the drugs or without getting into whatever they're addicted to. And once you bring that information to them, a lot of times they will move forward with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's true. So I'm glad we did the show, even though it was very sad, and that it's one of, as a parent, as a grandparent, as a friend to many people, I get concerned all the time about drugs and alcohol. I really do, because I've seen it be so many people's demise and take over their whole life. So it is sad, and end their life, like this poor young man, 20 years old, 20 years old. Gosh. So Tuesday we did Bullies to Buddies, and we talked about the fact that a lot of times bullying is brought on by jealousy. And people tend to, I remember some of the teen flicks that I've watched where actually the prettiest girl in the school gets picked on the most and can't make any friends because everybody's too jealous of her.
Yeah.
And it's sad but true. It's sad but true. So Shelley and I talked at length about how we kind of are the kind of people that rejoice in our friends' successes and the good things that can happen to them. And that's the way it's supposed to be. But we are a very coveting lot. The old adage, to keep up with the Joneses, has gotten very thick, murky waters. People go into debt so that they never get out again because they want to drive a new car, or because they want to have the nicest house on the block, or because they want, shoes that cost you $300 and you wear them once a month. We've become a very materialistic world. So if you are in that group of people, that kind of environment, and you learn to believe that somehow jealousy or coveting someone else's material stuff serves you and makes you fight to get it if you really want it, that's kind of a crazy mindset. That's kind of a crazy mindset. Because you should only go after what you want, not what somebody else has.
Right. Well, see, the whole thing is it's okay to see somebody have something and you want that thing. But the, like what you just said, but the damaging thing about jealousy is that you harbor ill will against them because they have it. And like I was saying before, you know, I've studied law of attraction and things like that. And if you're putting those kind of energetic signals out, then you're never going to draw the ability into your life to ever have anything that's of any value. You know, the people who say, oh, you know, money's the root of all evil and comments like that. Well, no, money's not the root of anything. It's the lust for money or the greed for money that's the root of all evil, because it makes people just do crazy things, you know, illegal things, criminal things, violent things, you know. But when you're talking about being jealous of somebody for having something you don't have, it's so much healthier to say, wow, they're lucky, or they must work hard, or whether they came in the family, whatever, however they came into their money. If they inherited it, you know what, good for them. So they inherited the money, and they knew what to do with it. You know, if I had millions of dollars sitting in an account, I'd probably buy a pair of $300 shoes. You know, everything is relative. When you're making $15 an hour, you know, and you're struggling to pay FPL, then you're not going to buy a $300 pair of shoes. But if you've got millions of dollars sitting in the bank, why not? So there's nothing wrong with expensive things, with suits that cost $5,000, with cars that cost $500, because there are people that have the money that can afford them. So instead of begrudging them that they have that money, you should feel excited knowing that that kind of money is out there, and put your mind to finding out how you can get a piece of that. And maybe you'll start with getting a $50 pair of shoes or a $100 pair of shoes and be open to how money works, you know. So if people understood more how life worked and tapped into it, they would feel less jealousy for people. But the jealousy comes from thinking that they can never have it, and now life is unfair because why does that person have it and they don't? But then there's going to be somebody that's going to be looking at you saying, how come you have these things, and they're even worse off than you. They're poorer or they're in a worse situation than you, and they're going to look at you and they're going to be jealous over something you have. Do you want everybody looking at what you have and thinking it's unfair that you have nice things and they don't have anything at all? So it kind of goes both directions. And when you really analyze, jealousy is just a completely useless emotion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and it is. It just, you know, it's like hatred, you know. I hear so many people use the phrase, I hate so-and-so, or I hate this, or I hate that. It's such a negative place to be in. It's such a, I don't know, I just think there's so many, and I don't think everybody should love everything or everybody. That's ludicrous. I don't believe that. But hate is pretty strong and not good for you, really not good for you. And besides that, if you hate somebody, they don't care. If you hate something, they certainly don't care, or it certainly doesn't care. So the only one it's really hurting is you.
And, right.
More positive thoughts and more positive energy is imperative to your own personal health and your own personal well-being. So when we're talking about kids in school and learning to understand the differences, first of all, and embrace different cultures and everything, which I think really, really young people do without even knowing it, but it's when they get, you know, well, like all the studies we've done, middle school is the worst. Middle school is the worst. And that's 12, 13, 14, those ages is the hardest, because that's when the kids are figuring out who they are, what they want, what's important, what isn't important. And, of course, with a little bit of guidance, that can be, you know, a worthwhile journey. With no guidance, with just a 13-year-old brain, you can make some big mistakes. Even with guidance, you can make big mistakes. But it's nice if the grown-ups in our world step up to the plate every now and then and give a little bit. I get that most of us understand that you want to have a relationship with a teenager, whether it's your own or a nephew or a niece or a friend's child, and you feel drawn to them and close to them, and you realize that every time you give lectures, you know, they kind of roll their eyes at you and think whatever. But sometimes, it's kind of important to share some things like that. It doesn't mean you have to tell them that they must obey you or they have to do what you're saying. I don't mean that. But sometimes as an adult who's been there and done that, the sharing of a story or the sharing of something that happened to you that might let them sit and, you know, think about that for a little while might make them, help them make a better decision. So,
right, and
again,
even if
that's,
they roll their eyes, the bottom line is you've already seeded their thoughts with that, and that's how you can influence somebody. You plant that seed and you let it grow in their minds. Because maybe they're a little immature, maybe what you're telling them is surprising them or embarrassing them. But the bottom line is you've already put that information there. So now they have it in their thought processes, and you'd be surprised when they might draw on it. And I'm speaking about this from experience with some of my nieces and nephew, because sometimes when I would talk to them, they would do the whole eye-rolling thing. And instead of getting pissed off and saying, that's disrespectful, don't do that, what I would do is I would just stick to my story. And what I would do is I would make a comment. I said, look, I said, I don't care if this is making you uncomfortable. I said, just listen to what I'm saying. And I said, and mull it over. I said, maybe tomorrow or next week or next month you'll feel a little bit different. But I think this is something that you need to hear. And I want to make sure that you're at least considering this before you make decisions when you're out with your friends. And sure enough, at some point, it would pop into their head. My nephew was telling me once he had gone out with a bunch of his friends, and this thing that I had told him weeks earlier, when he was out with his friends, all of a sudden, he said, this whole conversation popped back into his head. And he says, I was, like, annoyed that all of a sudden our conversation came back. He said, I got to admit, he said, I didn't like what my friends were doing because of what you said to me. And he said, I don't even think I would have noticed it beforehand. So you never know when you're going to influence a child, but just because they're rolling their eyes doesn't mean you're not getting through to them.
That's right. And anything when it has to do with a young mind is worth a shot, period. So,
but, you know, going back to jealousy just for one more minute, all these judge shows I watch, one of the things that flabbergasts me, and I see the judges, like Judge Judy and Judge Million and these other judges, they react the same way that I do because I think it's such nonsense. But you have a boyfriend and girlfriend or a husband and wife, and it's usually the husband, and very rarely is it the wife. Usually the husband ends up having an affair, and they attack the girlfriend, the mistress. They attack the mistress, or they damage the mistress's car. Usually this is what it is. The mistress's cars get trashed. The tires get slashed and they get scraped and stuff like that. But meanwhile, nothing ever happens to the guy. And the judges say the same thing that I always thought. They said, this woman got involved with your boyfriend because he told her that you weren't dating, or he told her that you were horrible and he needed somebody's shoulder to cry on. You know, she was lied to, you were lied to. How come you didn't wreck his car? You know? And it's like they said, why would you go after the other woman who's also a victim of this man? You know, you're taking your anger out in the wrong place. But that's another thing that jealousy does, is it blinds you to the reality of your true situation when it's around a relationship. They get angry at the wrong person. They think if they get angry at the mistress or whatever and not get angry at their boyfriend or their significant other, that somehow it's going to make that person want to be with them more. And a lot of times it has just the opposite reaction to it. But that's another area where jealousy kind of gets out of control, because your anger is even focused on the wrong individual. If you should be upset with anybody in that particular scenario, it should be on the person that cheated with you, not the person they cheated with. Because 9 times out of 10, the person they cheated with is being deceived just the way you were being deceived, and you're both victims. The true perpetrator there is the individual who did the cheating.
Mm-hmm. I never understood that either, Shelley. Never, ever, ever. I can remember being in that position with somebody, and you know, my girlfriend would say, "Let's go slash your tires," or "Let's go." Yeah. I said, "Why you come to her? Don't you want to go over and wrap a cord around his neck? He's
exactly.
the one supposed to be able to trust, not her. You don't even know her." So I never understood that either. But you're absolutely right. That happens all the time. Funny, isn't it? How we can,
mm-hmm.
when we don't want to believe something, we figure out a way to justify it. And the first
yeah,
thing we
they
go...
they convinced that somehow this individual did something aggressively that made them stray. Not that your boyfriend or your husband is just a dog. You know?
Yeah.
And it doesn't work that way.
It is funny, sad, funny, but very, very true. I agree
yep.
with you. And I've been, like I said, I've been in that position with girlfriends, and they say, come with me. I'm going to, you know, knock her block off, whatever. I have usually much worse words than those. And I'd
yeah.
say, well, do you want to talk to your old man? Don't you want to talk to your husband? Don't you want to talk to your boyfriend? I mean, you know, he's the one you got to trust tomorrow. Tomorrow you won't even know what she's doing.
Exactly.
But, again, and sometimes, again, that leads to the ever infamous bullying situations like that. So it was interesting, and Izzy talks about it a lot in the back of his workbook about some of the things that are life lessons that will help your child or some youngster that you care about be able to deal with the bullying in a better way, a more adult way. Well, I'm going to rephrase that. I don't know a lot of adults that handle things all that great either, in a more grown-up way. So,
right.
And then when we talked, the search for Prince Charming and Princess Fiona, and why I named it that is because as a little girl or as a little boy, we grow up on fairy tales. What are the fairy tales about? Almost everyone, no matter which one you go to, Snow White, Cinderella, Rapunzel, even the Shrek movie. That's why I picked Princess Fiona. Even the Shrek movie was all about everybody was miserable until they found the perfect person. So you grow up unless somebody else chats with you now and then, like I'm talking about an adult in your life saying, you know, this is a fairy tale. And I don't want you to think that, you know, around some corner there's this absolutely positively perfect person and you just have to go in search of them or him or her until you find them. Otherwise, you're not going to be happy. Well, that's pretty poor guidance because that's really not the way it happens and that's not the way it's set up to happen. But the worst part is that you think you're only half a person until you find the other half. And that's
right.
where you make a mistake, because you start out a whole person, you stay a whole person, you are a person with whipped cream and cherry on top when you find a good significant other. And that's the way it has to feel. It has to be about not completion, but in addition to your great heart, your great strength, your great personality, now you have a complementary addition to who you are, not
right.
a complete to who you are. And that seems to be a major problem and creates such horrific sadness in people. I mean, I know people that can't deal with anything because they haven't found that person. Or
right.
they're sad continuously, always and continuously, because what's wrong with me? I can't find Mr. Right. I can't find the person who's going to make me happy. If you say you can't find somebody that's going to make you happy to me, it takes me 10 minutes to stop laughing.
Right.
Because
right.
You know, is not going to happen. Somebody that
never
can laugh.
That's why you haven't found them yet, because it can't happen. Nobody
exactly.
can make you happy if you're not already okay with your life. And that doesn't mean that there aren't things about your life that aren't going the way you'd like them to. But the bottom line is books like The Power of Now and some of these other books I've read that are really powerful, it's like, you know, they talk about the fact of living in the moment. You know, you only have now. It's an interesting concept. When I first started reading the book, it kind of like cramped my brain. But as I got through the book, I appreciated more and more what this author was saying. Eckhart Tolle, he's very esoteric. So not everybody can read his books. But there's other people that aren't so esoteric that talk about that concept. In fact, I think a lot of them, if you read the back of their books, that's one of their resources. And then what they do is they put it into more user-friendly terms, you know, because he's extremely esoteric the way he writes. But the essence of it is that all you have is now. So even if you have challenging things going on in your life, all right, be appreciative for the things that aren't challenging. Be appreciative for the things that have come your way that have brought you to where you are, some of the challenges that may have strengthened you, you know, some of the people that are in your life. But want something better. That's okay. And as long as you're looking in that direction, you know, those opportunities will slowly but surely come into your life. But if you're constantly sitting there being bitter about life, then you're never opening the door to see opportunities. They're going to be right in front of your face, and because you're in such a bad mood, you're just going to not even notice it. And I've heard people tell these stories where, you know, two different people in a bad situation, but one person was appreciative of their lot in life. They were like, no matter where I was, I tried to enjoy the moment because that's really all I had. I could step off the curb and get hit by a bus tomorrow. How do I know? I have to try to exact as much joy as I can at whatever I'm going through, you know. And I'm not talking about sitting in the hospital room of a friend that just got hit by a car, and you're not going to be joyful. But what I'm talking about is just overall, even if your life isn't where you want it to be, you can still be happy. You don't wait to be happy. Don't check off as soon as this happens, I'm going to be happy, because guess what? It'll never happen. You'll never get there if your happiness is contingent on some future event, because it's like you keep pushing it off into the future. That's kind of the concept of living in the now. But it was incredible information, and it, like I said, I did an audio book, so I kept listening to it in my car, and it took a little while, but it did kind of even alter. I'm already a positive person, and it sort of altered my thinking a little bit more. And and sometimes if I catch myself reacting badly to something's happening, now because I'm so self-aware, I can literally shut it down in moments, and so I am generally happy. Most of the time, I would have to say, the even when challenging things are going on, I can always find something to put me in a better place. Not that I'm blissfully happy, but that I'm in a better place than I would have been before I read these types of books.
Well, and I do think the power, I mean, the week that we did mental health and we talked about depression and we talked about sliding so rapidly down a hill of despair, and halfway down you give up and just go with the slide. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think that's what a lot of people do. They know that something's not right. They feel it. They get it. And they struggle in the beginning of the slide. And then because there's nothing for them to hang on to stop it, No little root or something to grab a hold of so that they can stop and climb back up, that they give up and they just slide all the way down to the bottom because they think that they can't do anything else. And that
right.
is symbolic of our lives sometimes. Sometimes things do seem out of control. Sometimes things do seem like, you know, who's going to slap me in the face today, metaphorically, of course, but who's going to do that to me today? And you actually jump over the side of that cliff and start the descent when you think like that. You actually, you know, like push yourself over the edge in your own head. So what's to stop you from turning that around and thinking to yourself, okay, so I don't get where I was yesterday. What can I do today that's going to make things better? And actually, I always say the week we did mental health, but we did mental health for almost a month because it seemed like our minds were caught up in it. And when I look through my books, it seems like we spent a lot of time on that because we found so many interesting stories in history. And we both had watched movies that were, you know, exemplified the way it was back in the day for women and mental health and the despair of losing a child back in the days when it happened to women all the time and all the things that, that can push you over the edge.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
You know, your mindset and your ability to get some strength and happiness from within is imperative to your survival, period. It's imperative to your survival. Because you can't expect somebody else to get in your head with you. It doesn't work like that. So you have to be it. You know, I heard from an old friend today, Jean-Lou, who was a pretty regular volunteer at the Institute years ago, who would come and do lectures and everything. And he's a bit of an intuitive and kind of a different kind of a guy. but his favorite saying was, you have to drive your own car.
I love that.
And the first time he said it to me, I got a visual of what that meant. You know, and I thought to myself, oh, you know, yeah, he's talking about a backseat driver. And I laugh at myself every time I remember that. So, and I thought to myself, wow, that's really good because that is so true, right? If you really want to know where you're going, you have to be driving the car. So that particular comment to me, in a time in my life when I was struggling with some things that were going on in my personal life, was incredibly beneficial to me. And sometimes you have to be awake enough to hear those things. You know what I mean? Sometimes that used to be something I said to people at the Institute all the time, too. If you walk around with your arms clenched in front of you and don't meet anyone's gaze, don't say good morning to anyone. Sit at a table and don't look up and don't look around the room. You close everybody off from you. And you shut off every possibility for someone to offer you their hand. And that's a big mistake because even though we're saying somebody else can't fix you, somebody else can't make you better, somebody else can't get your positivity flowing, only you, but you need some of those, you know, some of those helping hands.
Right.
And sometimes if you're not open to them, you think everybody doesn't care, when it's actually you who's not answering the door. There's people knocking, you're not letting them in. Right.
So, very interesting.
Well, you know, and I know it about myself, Shell. I know that I have days when I lock everybody out. You couldn't make me happy by buying me a banana split, and on a good day, you absolutely could. So, but I mean, you know, there are days when you just get consumed by your own self, and but sometimes you need to do that. I'm not saying that that's always a bad thing. But if you're wondering why nobody's looking at you or nobody's offering you anything or nobody's trying to be that friend in need, it might be you. So, I, you know, I do that. I do that with myself. If I'm feeling kind of grumpy and cranky and I go to the store and I start talking to people, anybody, everybody, I have a much better day. I have a much, much better day because I knock down the wall that I set up myself. And it's good for you. It's really, really good for you to not have walls all around you because...
And the whole thing is that, you know, like I love the term that you use, Pollyanna. I don't want to come across Pollyanna either. That's why I try to qualify some of the things I say. Things happen to us in life. You can't walk around blissfully happy unless you're just numb all the time, you know. Things happen, but the point I'm making is that you can always get yourself to a better place. You don't have to wallow in what's happening. Like what I used the example of my friend's daughter yesterday, okay, when she stopped wallowing. After the car accident, she ended up in a much better place, and now she attributes a lot of her success to that experience because it was empowering to her in a way that before the accident, she doesn't think she ever could have achieved that level of empowerment. Now she sees herself as having the ability to do anything she wants to do. So this tragedy, by anybody else's perception, ended up being one of the best things that ever happened to her because she chose to go there with it, you know? But at the time when she first started healing and she was in so much pain, of course she's not going to be blissfully happy at that moment. This took time to unfold for her because she had a very, very strong foundation with her parents, and they kept pulling her into a better place, and then she finally got there on her own. So, you know, so she did have some assistance. But I don't want people to misunderstand me. Of course there's going to be challenges in life that at that moment you're going to be devastated. You're going to feel sad, you know. Illness, car accident, a dear friend passing away, a pet passing away can be traumatic to people, you know. So there's things that happen to us in life, and I'm not suggesting that you walk around with a smile on your face, but when you get into this existing in the now, you don't allow yourself to wallow, and that's the gift behind that, because it's when we wallow that we can't bring ourselves out of that bad situation. People get in accidents every day. People die every day. Tragedies happen. People go through divorces. It's not personal. It's just kind of like how life unfolds for certain people. And it's okay to feel sad or even to feel devastated at that moment, but then work on making yourself feel better, making yourself rationalize it, making understanding a little bit more about the situation, offering help if you can, or sometimes you can't help. Sometimes you can just be an ear and listen, like this individual who's in the hospital. You know, there's no way I could help her, but I could go there and let her talk to me and just sit there and listen and give her somebody to vent to, you know. And sometimes that's the best help you can give somebody, is just to be present and aware and see what they need, not what you need to do for them. Because sometimes the best thing you can do for them is just let them talk it out. So like I said, I just wanted to clarify that. You can always get yourself in a better place, and that's the purpose of living in the now.
Well, and like you say, there's a lot to be said for being aware of what somebody needs, because you're right. You know, I have a favorite story. I may have shared it on the air before, but little kids, you know, young kids, like I'm talking like 2, 3, 4, 5, their awareness has not been blanketed yet by social interacting and things like that. So they're right. I mean, that's why they cry when they get hurt or don't get their way. That's why they laugh uncontrollably. That's why you're shoveling food down a 10-month-old in the high chair and you're shoveling too fast and all of a sudden they spit it out at you. I mean, their instincts are right on. We learn how to control them eventually, but they're very instinctual. And even though the spitting out of pureed carrots is not my favorite thing to have happen to me, it is who they are. So along with that acuteness is the fact that they seem to be aware of what's going on with you. And mm-hmm. I'll share this little story. I got the information that my my very favorite uncle, who I was just so close to, did so many firsts with him, and he was a pistol. He was a heavy drinker, full of piss and vinegar, but any 14-year-old in their right mind would love him because he'd do anything, whenever. You know, if we said in the middle of the night it's hot out and there was no AC in our house in Florida way back in the late 50s and early 60s, so we'd all get in the car and he'd take us all to a pool at a hotel and we'd all sneak in and go for a swim. That's the kind of guy he was. Now, what 13 or 14 wouldn't love that kind of stuff, right? So he was a pistol. And, I know. And of course, he was the bane of my father. My mother could go with it. My mother was very childlike in that respect, but my father would have fits. But at any rate, when he passed, he was in Florida, and we were in upstate New York, and I had Spike and Mike. I didn't have Diana or David yet, and of course, I had Danny, my little brother, who was only 10 months older than my oldest son. And they were all with me, and they were all playing, and a couple other kids that I was taking care of. And my mother came in the back door and said Uncle Raymond was found on the side of the road in his car reading the morning paper before he went to work. He had a heart attack. Aww. So my mother and I hugged, and we both, you know, we didn't, you know, carry on, but we cried a little bit. And they walked out, and my son Spike, who was three, was watching everything that was going on. He wasn't even three. He had to be two because I didn't even have Diana yet. So he started putting all the toys in the toy box, told Danny and Mikey and Sean and whoever else was there that day to put the toys away. And I sat down on the couch, and I was in control, but he just got on the couch, sat up beside me, and slid his little hand in mine and just sat there. He didn't say, "What's the matter?" He didn't say, "Are you crying, Mommy?" He didn't say any of those things. He just sat right beside me and held me. So it's an awareness that we are all born with, but we lose it because we're afraid somebody's going to look at us like we're wacko if we do things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's in us, and we do have that capability to be able to instinctively know when to shut up, when to talk, when to be there, when to not be there. We have that. It is with us. And if we choose to, we can make that flourish, or we can shut it down, which is what most of us do. So, but that's happened to me many times. I've had one of my kids see that I'm sad and put their little tiny hands on my face. "Mom, do you got a headache?" You know, they didn't really know what was wrong. They knew something was wrong. So we all, I think, are born with that gift, but we don't water it. We don't, you know, feed it. We let go of it because we're afraid it makes us vulnerable in most cases. So let's jump, though, because we're almost out of time, and I want to talk about lovely Sarah that we met yesterday.
Oh, yes.
And when you talk about making the best of the worst, or making lemonade out of lemons, or all the old sayings, that's what this young woman has done. And she's like a breath of fresh air, isn't she?
Certainly is. Yes, I loved our conversation with her.
And she's not. Sometimes you meet somebody like that, and they're almost too big for their britches, if you know what I mean. I don't say that unkindly. I just say that, like, you know, talking to an old broad like me and a sort of old broad like you, she never adapted an air of dominance ever in our conversation. And yet, she's achieved things that we know people three times her age can achieve. But she still has some humility about what she went through and is still growing. And I think it's wise beyond her years for her to realize that she still has a lot to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very, very impressed by her. What's your analogy of what she went through? We only got 4 minutes, so sum it up.
Well, I think that what she went through, similar to what happened to my friend's daughter, is I think it strengthened her. I think it made her more compassionate. That one comment that I mentioned a couple times yesterday, that no matter how many times you push me down, I will continue to help you up. That just really, really got to me. It showed somebody who learned compassion. She's definitely, at one time she might have gone into a little bit of feeling sorry for herself, but she's certainly not there anymore, which shows that that's something that people can strive to get out of. And she really is in control of her life. She's doing very positive things. She feels good about herself and what she's doing, and she deserves to feel good about herself and what she's doing, and her story can absolutely help other people. But she learned strength and compassion, and I don't know if that can happen effectively unless you have gone through something challenging in your life and chose to survive past it. So I'm very impressed with her.
Yeah, I was too. I think that, and again, I think her softness and her humility is also refreshing, because a lot of times
we talk to
young people like that, and they're almost too full of themselves. You want to feel good about them, but you also want to say, chill a little bit. You know, this happened to you, and it's amazing that you've survived and everything, but, you know, step back, Jack. And you don't feel that way with her. You feel like you want to embrace her and support her and make sure that, if you can, that nothing that difficult happens to her again. So she's endearing, I guess, would be the right word. So I think we'll have her on the show again. Maybe during the Christmas holidays, when she doesn't have to go to school every day, maybe she can give some words of wisdom and support to some of the young people that struggle during the holidays for various reasons, and some of the old people that have a tough time with the holidays. On that note, we're down to 2 minutes. We are moving forward. Yours truly will be going back and forth from Union City, Michigan. It's a go at the Vibrant Health Institute in Union City, Michigan. So I'm very, very excited and am looking forward to this journey and the opportunity to reach out. And this place is going to be all about getting yourself to a better place. We're not boasting anything that is not reality. We're talking about simple foods, simple exercise, simple talks, simple support. Everything will be kept very simple. And the most amazing part, because I talk to everybody all the time, Renee, where can I go? But they don't have, you know, 16 grand to go spend someplace for 3 or 4 weeks. You won't have to do that here. This will be extremely affordable. And
all right. I like
more
that. I like
than more than supportive, because we will be there on property with our guests, through the whole programs. So I'm very excited. So I want you to call me when the show is over, because I never know which phone to call you on. So call me whichever phone you can talk on, because we have a couple things to talk about. But I want to wish everybody a great, great weekend. I think soon they're going to do the snow on City Place for those of you.
I love that.
Yeah, I do fun and the lighting of the big Christmas tree on City Place. And it promises to be a nice, cool, but sunny weekend so far. Of course, that could change. Everybody have a great weekend, and we will be back on Monday. God bless everybody. Bye-bye. Thanks, Shel. Call me back.
Okay. Thanks, Reenie. Thanks, everyone. Have a wonderful weekend.